This is the Memphis Real Estate Hour on KWAM. And now, here's your host, Dean Harris.
All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Memphis Real Estate Hour. I am your host, Dean Harris. I'm with Crestcore Realty over on Summer Avenue. Appreciate you guys tuning in this morning. Some of you might be listening on AM 990 Memphis. Others of you on 107.9 FM, The Voice. And then you could be streaming the show at www.kwam990.com. You guys are also on Facebook Live. So if you're listening to the show right now and you want to tune in on Facebook Live, go to the show's Facebook page, The Memphis Real Estate Hour. You can not only watch today's show, but you I will post today's show after it's complete onto the show's Facebook page. And then you can go back and listen at your own pace. There's probably, I think now at this point, there's about 65 to 70 shows on there. We title them all so you can take a look and see if any of those topics interest you, and you can listen to them on your own time. The Memphis Real Estate Hour concentrates on investing in Memphis real estate. We also will focus on all those related topics. I'll discuss local and national investment trends, as well as give you an inside look at what it takes to become an investor here in Memphis, or what it takes to become a bigger and better investor. I remind you every single show that I am that investor. If you have an old home you need to sell quickly, I don't care what shape it's in or where it's at, what it looks like, or what kind of work it needs. It doesn't matter to me. Shoot me a quick email, dean@crestcore.com, and I will make sure you get a cash offer on that home today. I've got a very nice treat today. We're in store. We've got, I told you guys a few weeks ago that Crestcore had launched a residential and retail division. So I've got Alyssa Fowler in the studio this morning with me. She is the head of that division. So I'm going to be excited to talk to her in just a second. And then Dan Butler with Crestcore Realty is also, again, here in studio, as he is now, I guess, at this point every week, right? Dan, good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Dan and I are going to talk in the second segment about zig when others are zagging. You've probably heard us mention this term before here in the studio when we're talking, but today we're going to kind of tell you what we mean and some of the examples that that we're using when we mean zig when others are zagging. But let's get right into it today. Enough about Dan and I. You hear a whole lot about from us, but I want to introduce to you guys Alyssa Fowler. Alyssa, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
How are you?
Doing great.
Good. So I came on a few weeks ago and I introduced you and I introduced Crestcore Realty retail division. And a lot of people look at us and they think of Crestcore as an investment firm, a property management firm. And one of the things that we're trying to break away from is just being pigeonholed into that. So we've started our retail division and we're happy to have you.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Yes.
And very happy. And I've noticed that when I've brought it up to people that typically it was investment properties, you wanted to join to venture into the residential side. And any of my listings where I changed over the signage, it was, okay, great. Sounds great for you.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been a thing of where, well, I don't want to go with you. It's just investment properties. It's very much of very open. I'm like, oh, that's great.
Wouldn't you agree that when buyers and sellers are looking anyway, they're buying – they're signing up when they sign a listing agreement or a buyer's agency agreement. They're signing that with you, wouldn't you say?
Yes. I think in this day and age, with how prevalent all the internet access is, that it's more so what you represent, not exactly your company or your brokerage, but
that's
it's
right.
How do you present yourself to your buyers and sellers,
yeah.
And do they want to work with you? That's more so what anything is now, is the personal relationship and how accessible you are to them.
Mm-hmm.
You say it's of how you they can text you and get right back to you, and you're able to communicate. And there's so many that don't respond that I've had other people say they get the listing and then they don't talk to me.
Do you hear that a lot? Do you hear, hey, I spoke with my agent, we listed the property, and now I haven't heard anything else from them?
All the time. And I think sometimes it could be the agent feels that, oh, it's not moving right now. It's not moving right away. Mm-hmm. I want to hide, be the ostrich in the sand and bury their head, mm-hmm. versus have the talk, have the communication.
Sure.
With them.
What market trends, we read a lot. I read a lot just about online with real estate and trends that are going on. I know in Memphis we've got, are we still... Let me back up. A couple months ago, even 6 to 12 months ago, all I heard was low inventory. we've got nothing to sell. We've got, this is from the residential retail world, nothing to sell. Has anything about that changed?
I think so. Some is sitting. You look, say, I live in Collierville, and you know, a year ago, anything under 300,000, it was gone in a day. Mm-hmm. You look now, you can see 40 properties. Some are sitting. Now, if it's updated, if it's, they put the work into it, they put the money in it, they're going to sell it still in a day, in a couple days. But if it hasn't had the work done to it, it's going to sit. You know, buyer's expectations, I think, are going up a little bit for what the money they're paying.
And that, so how often, you know, and that's one of the things, I wonder how often you see a home that is maybe in a good area, in a desirable market where it should sell immediately, but it sits because of what? What's the main reason why a home sits?
I can think of partially in the municipal school districts where you have these different areas where you see where it's just steadily increased in price and the value of the homes. Mm-hmm. It's homeowners that have not put their own sweat equity into it or updating into it, and they still expect top dollar in the market.
That's what it is.
They're not going to get it.
Mm-hmm. But the homes that are updated and are you know, cleaned up, granite, or whatever the updates might be.
Say, those... what are the updates that people expect right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. What are those updates?
You look at a 1990 house. Mm-hmm. They have the low countertops in the master bathrooms. Those need to be gone. Those need to be replaced with updated fixtures. You need the granite or the marble. Or
in the bathrooms, even.
In the bathrooms. Mm-hmm. And even granite is somewhat where it's going to courts, where I have a home that's listed right now that a buyer came in and said it looked a little bit dated. It's built in 1990, completely updated maybe 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's still, they're expecting a flip home.
So is granite dated now?
Some of it, yes.
Really? Is it just the color or is it the actual material?
It's the colors. So if you get in the grayer tones or the more neutral tones, you're updated. But if you use that new Venetian gold that was popular 12 years ago that went into every, or the Ubatuba.
Yeah. That sounds funny, but yeah.
But you know what I'm talking about. The black or that kind of gold color. Mm-hmm. Those are out. I mean, your home is dated.
What about brass color?
That's gone, man.
My wife says it's coming back.
Chip and Joanna. They kind of brought it back. So not the brass from the 1990s, but it's more that brushed kind of gold color.
Yeah.
That has come back some.
Yeah. My wife's all over that.
Well, because you're redoing part of your house.
Redoing a house. Yeah. So that, I'm like, I can't see it, but she said, we're going to be on the forefront of the, you know, I'm like, are you sure about this? But anyway.
It is. It's not for me personally.
That's exactly how I worded it. Well, have your pick, but that's not what I like. But
is that one of those battles you just gave up?
Win the war. Lose battle.
Right. Yep. We're talking with Alyssa Fowler this morning, guys. She is the new head of our retail and residential division at Crestcore Realty. We're happy to have her in here today. But let's talk about community developments. Anything going on in Collierville? I know you live out there. Anything in Germantown or anything even downtown, midtown that you're hearing about that is exciting that's coming up?
I mean, there's a lot going on in a lot of different areas. Collierville, mm-hmm. not so much in itself, but in Marshall County, which is right down Highway 72, you've got the new Amazon Fulfillment Center going in there, which that's going to bring 850 jobs to the area.
What level jobs are those? Do we know?
A lot of them are going to be packers. I mean, but you'll probably have some management jobs in there as well. I mean, mm-hmm. it's going to have some multi-level jobs going in there. You've got in Lakeland, you've got the Lake District that's coming on strong where the Bell's mm-hmm. Factory Outlet Mall used to be.
Yeah, what's that going to be?
It is going to be more so, which you see them in other communities, but it's going to have where it's shopping and then living space above it.
Out in Lakeland. Wow.
Yes. That's why they built that new exit at Exit 20, where they spent so many years and so much money because they're having that Lake District go in.
Wow.
Which they're also talking, Lakeland wants their own high school. So you're going to
have. Do they really?
Yes. They've already built the middle school.
And they want their own high school.
They want their own high school.
I always wondered that piece of land right there, why it never became more, where the Factory Outlet Mall was, why that never made it. Was it because,
too far out, you think?
Yeah, back when it was.
Back in the day.
10 years ago?
Yeah, too far out. Mm-hmm. Well, it was there. We moved here in 1987 in Cordova, and we used to shop out there. I mean, it was there since the 80s. And then it just slowly, you know, people didn't shop at Factory Outlet Malls.
Man, I remember watching the video of them tearing that thing down.
Yeah.
They used to have a card shop out there. Anyway, guys, we're talking to Alyssa Fowler with Crestcore Realty. She is the head of our retail division. You can reach her at 901-371-1758, or you can email her, alyssa@crestcore.com. I want you to brag on yourself for just a second here. We don't, Dan and I typically come on the show and we don't do a whole lot of self-promotion. We try to give our investors the ins and outs of our experiences with investing. But tell me a little bit about what separates, I'm going to ask you to do this. So tell me a little bit about what separates you from other agents, why you think maybe going with Alyssa and Crestcore is going to be a little bit more beneficial from, a big agent with a big firm here in town.
I'm always reachable. That's a big thing is you can always get, I'm going to text you back typically within 5 minutes, unless I'm out of town or unless I'm in a plane.
Yeah.
I'm going to reach back out to you. You can always get a hold of me and I don't have a big ego. I'm not going to be afraid if there's something you want me to try or I need to ask advice from somebody else, I'm going to do everything in my power to get your house sold or find you a house.
Yeah.
It's not, I don't know everything. I don't claim to, sure, but I know other people that do.
Right. When I first started in real estate way back when, one of the funniest things ever was I would catch myself in these situations where a new licensed agent, of course, this isn't you, but with me, I was a newly licensed agent. And I would have people come in. I was working new construction. They would come into the model home and start just, reeling off questions one after the other. And I didn't know, of course, at the time, know all the answers. So one thing I always did, and this is what I think in back then separated me, was I would always write them down. If I didn't know the answer to the question, I would not hesitate to say, I don't know, but I'm going to find out. So I can appreciate that stance. I mean, if it's something that you don't know, you're always willing to go find out. So no, that's a great feature in my mind. Right.
Yeah. absolutely.
Yes.
No, and it's, and I can talk to a brick wall, so I can get along with anyone. Yeah. I can flex towards different personalities.
Sure.
I don't have a problem asking a question.
That's good. All right. Well, let me ask you one more thing and then we'll let you run. I was trying to mainly just get your info out there, but let's talk about some of the technology. Interest rates and technology, different things if you can hit on. What is everything? I know Keller Williams is talking about they're coming out with an application that is trying to top Zillow. I know that most people are on their phones, right? I mean, do most of your buyers reach you or clients reach you through phone?
Yes. It's 100%. It's all about your internet presence. And I think in this market, we're seeing where it's been so strong for a seller's market that I see some things where I see so many cell phone pictures on listings. And I think that's a sloppy way to go.
Yeah.
It's, you've got to do the professional pictures, your online presence. They're viewing your house initially from the internet pictures.
And that's their first impression.
Mm-hmm. If you've got a million things out in your countertops and in your bathroom vanities, they're looking at that. They're not looking at the vanities. Yeah. They're looking at all your stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's that first impression is key. So you've got to have professional pictures. And then on interest rates, I got to see a little bit towards the end of last year, you saw a little bit dip. You saw a little bit of nervousness of buyers.
Yeah.
But you're talking to Ludi from Independent Bank, it's interest rates. She thinks they're going to hold steady. You've got a credit score of 740 where you're getting the low fours. For the foreseeable, for the next year, she doesn't see them going up.
That's great.
Tremendously. So you can still, it's a great time to be a buyer. It's a great time to be a seller right now, too, because you're getting top dollar for your house. But as a buyer, you're still getting a fair deal, but you're getting a good interest rate. And so.
Yeah. So the time is now.
The time is now to buy or sell.
Hey, I really appreciate you coming on the show today. Thanks for your time. Guys, don't hesitate to give Alyssa a call. I mean, if you've listened to me on the show, you know that we don't do a whole lot of self-promotion. It's just not really how we've catered the show, but I am going to ask you to call Alyssa. So if you're in the Memphis area, surrounding areas, and you're interested in selling your home or you're in the market for buying one, give Alyssa a call. It's 901-371-1758, or you can email her at alyssa@crestcore.com. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
All right, guys, we're going to take a real short break. We're going to come back. Dan and I are going to talk about zigging when others are zagging in the investment world. So, yeah, stay tuned. You're listening to the Memphis Real Estate Hour on AM 990 Memphis. Dan?
Yeah, man.
Finally getting to you, bud.
Yeah, man.
Let's talk about zigging and zagging when zigging when others are zagging or vice versa. What you and I like to use this term.
Mm-hmm.
I've you started it and I've kind of picked up on it more, but it makes total sense. The phrase does, but what in real estate, what are we talking about when we say we're going to zig when others are zagging?
Things get hot, certain, zip codes and types of properties and, types of products and, ways to buy. you know, the herd follows, yeah, and all of a sudden you got all this competition, and it's like, what can you do, you know, let the herd keep going and you try to go off on a different direction, you know, where it's less, you know, kind of competition, you know, better buys, all that. What can you do to, you know, to think that way versus just, oh, wow, everybody's buying a 3-2 in Cordova for $90,000 for $1,200 rent.
Yeah.
You know,
why do we want to be in that?
Why do I want to be in that competition? Mm-hmm. You know, so I've just, ever since I started this business, you know, back in 01, I've always tried to think about, you know, watching the trends, watching where people are going and not caring about where they're going and thinking about where I want myself to go. You know what I mean?
Maybe like, the same thing, just in a different area, or maybe the same thought process.
Yep.
But maybe
for a different avenue
to get there,
different way to purchase it, or, you know, and I think, you know, I wrote this down, just I love that Warren Buffett quote, you know, be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful.
Yeah.
You know, so, kind of equates to this and kind of not, you know, just, I don't think it's so much a fearful thing, but,
it can be though, especially with investing. I mean, you know, if a trend is to go out and buy a certain product, I mean, it's human nature to go the safest route. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think that we're good at is putting our investors into situations that we've been in. And what I mean by that is we're not asking, you know, when we say zig and zag, we're not asking you to zig in the dark with us. You know, you and Douglas are really good at, hey, let's go off on this and zig on our own. Find out if this works. Mm-hmm. If it does, let's participate and then show our investors what we've done. Yep. Example being Jackson. Mm-hmm. We don't know anybody in Memphis that I'm aware of that has gone into Jackson and has really not just bought a home or two, but has taken on the city and the culture that because it is different. I mean, no matter what you say. Although it's, you know, 65 miles away, it's the same. I mean, it's a different place completely. Mm-hmm. So we have taken that as we got into Jackson. That's one of the things that we're talking about. Meaning, we're zigging when others are zagging up there. We're going into areas where we're finding good deals, good tenants, and we're slowly but surely getting that in front of our investors.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like that's a great example. The most latest example that we've tried to do, because you know the Renters Warehouse of the world, the I'm trying to think, Home River Group, those kind of guys, they're looking for big markets where they can, you know, Renters Warehouse will, you know, proudly state they won't buy anybody that with less than 500 houses under management, you know, and so there's a ton of people with 200 to 500, you know, and that are just happy being at 200 to 500, and if you can help, you know, work with them and,
great,
you know, turn that into, you know, 600, 700, 800, you know, 100 units. That's a win. So, you know, but for me, it all started, you know, if I go back to the original, like when we started this business, I mean, one of the ones that I read a book one time, it was about 2-bedroom houses, you know, and you know, if you think about the hedge funds, do anyone buy 2 bedrooms that you can think of?
No.
Now, I can't think of one hedge fund that buys 2-bedrooms. I'm sure there might be one or two.
Yeah.
There might be some. I don't want to put absolutely.
Someone's going to call us right after here. Hey, I got one.
That's why I'm always, like my son, almost never. But, you know, and some of the guys at Turnkey and those guys, they don't sell 3-bedrooms. I mean, 2-bedrooms. Mm-hmm. So why not, you know.
Why not
try to go get some 2-bedrooms and make it happen? I mean, those are some of my best houses, our best houses. Like, you know, rent for $650, you know, now 2-bedroom, that's a $400 or $500 rental. That's a different, I mean, a little bit different beast, but
$600, $650.
I mean, that's a sweet spot.
I have two of those and I have no issues with them.
Yeah. They're great little houses. Mm-hmm. They cost less for the AC, cost less for the roof.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is some argument about, you know, the amount of rent you get and the water heater still costs the same or, you know, some of the things that you do. But, you know, I think overall, because you got into a, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 cheaper than that 3-bedroom, because everybody else is bidding on the 3-bedroom. Mm-hmm. You know, this just opens you up for more possibilities. So that was one that was big. I mean, you know,
what's some of those other examples?
Yeah, like apartments.
Yep.
You know, how many people are from California trying to get that 100+ apartment unit?
Yep.
You know, how many out there that we see that are 20 or 15 or 10? You know,
very few. You know, right. I mean. Are you seeing more of those or less of those than versus like 100?
I just think the competition to buy the 100 is much higher.
Yep.
Versus a 20.
Yep.
Because the 20, you know, people can't get their head around. You know, I've been on a panel at IMN several times with about small multifamily, because people kind of don't understand under 50 units, what do you do with that? You know, you can't put a full-time staff in place. And so you have to, you know, we have to, for us, weekly inspections and driving by and keeping the yard up every 2 weeks and trash. And I mean, there's a lot of nuances that, you know, if you had it 100 plus, you got somebody that's their job is going there every day to live or, you know, work in that office and make it happen. So
there's also way fewer buyers for that. You know,
correct.
When you look at it on that end, there's just, there's not very many people that can pull that off. There's a ton of people that can pull off a $40,000, you know, single family. There's not a ton of people that can pull off those bigger units.
Well, that's just like in the property management world. I mean, there's not many of us that do the small multifamily.
Yeah.
You know, but the guys that do the large multifamily, they can't even think about doing can't think about doing a 20 unit apartment. In their mind, they just can't.
They just don't know how to put it together.
They don't know how to put it together. They don't know how to make money. And I'm kind of the opposite. I'm like, how am I going to make money? I got to get hundreds and hundreds of units of multifamily, so it keeps me out of that lane. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, I think tax sales was big. You know, we did that for a long time when we first started. And then all of a sudden it got automated.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you got everybody all over the world was bidding on the same house that you were getting for $12,000.
Yeah.
That's worth probably 50. Now it's getting bid up to, you know, 30 plus.
And now some guy in Europe can sit there and be bidding on it.
Yeah. And he thinks it's such an awesome deal, which, you know, it's still a decent deal, but
it's an awesome deal at 12.
It's an awesome deal at 12 because there's so much risk of just the title and, you know, because you don't know. It's kind of like opening a Christmas present. You don't know what's going to be inside that house.
Like your first one you bought, right?
Oh, yeah.
I love that story.
Yeah. Two dead dogs, a couple rats that were smashed because of all the trash.
Oh.
Three 30-yard dumpsters of trash. But we were willing to take that risk because we got it for $12,000 for a house that's now worth, you know, $125,000. So
I know there's some investors listening right now that would take that.
They'd take it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, right.
But now, I mean, it'd be hard to go get that same deal.
No, those aren't there.
Because the tax sale's gotten just so popular. Then we moved to land bank. You know, we did land bank for a while.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't that many people. There'd only be a handful of us over there bidding on land bank houses because people didn't understand it, didn't, you know, whatever. And now everybody and the brother goes to the land bank sale, you know.
So they got to think of something else.
They got to think of something else, you know. And so, you know, I thought it was a good example. You know, things come back around in that sense of there'll be a time when tax sales gets, you know, less.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, and then you can go back to
some regulation. You go back to it. You know, like, that's where I was going with that. Like, wholesalers, they all went from direct mail to, you know, cold call. You know, what's next? You know what I mean? Like, now everybody calls, and like, you talk to a seller, and they're like, man, you're the seventh person I've talked to
that's
today.
That's called me.
You know, like, so what's the differentiator now, you know, that you got to figure out?
I think that's what separates the wholesalers, too, since we're talking about those guys, is the creativity that they can apply, I guess, to their marketing and how well they can reach the sellers. Because it's all about reaching the seller, right? I mean, that's all that it is. And what I mean by that is not just, you know, sticking a letter in the mail to an address that's on the public record, because that, you know, that could be... they could have moved out of that, you know, address years ago, but to really get in front of that seller. So yeah, that's what's separating those guys. Craigslist versus MLS.
Yeah. I mean, I spent a ton of time on Craigslist early on.
Yeah.
You know, just perusing. I learned, you know, who was putting it on there, and then I'd call them and, you know, start up a conversation. Next thing you know, you're buying a house. Yeah. You know, but nobody else was calling them because they didn't think of that idea. You know, but then that idea becomes popular, and then you gotta
now you
move
put something on.
On
Craigslist, you're getting flooded,
right? You're getting flooded. So, and some of this is driven by, you know, from the zigzag standpoint, like market fluctuations. You know, as soon as the market shifts another way, you know, like build to rent, that's the new hot.
Yeah,
I mean that everybody talks about that.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and I know you love it to death. But
I just can't.
That's not, you're not gonna zag over there, are you?
I'm not zagging over. I mean, Yeah, that's a whole nother show. We had a meeting with a guy Friday, but I think the key to that is, and we'll move on. Yeah. But if you own the HOA,
sure.
If you can own the HOA as the developer and have one in place that's strong, I think maybe it can last. But yeah. I just try to imagine what that looks like in 6 or 7 years. But what else? Give me some of those other examples.
Yeah, small commercial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I was a wholesaler, I'd be hitting up small commercial. Like, no wholesaler hits it.
None. Yeah, I don't know anybody. Do you? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't sit here and name you one. Out of all the wholesalers we know, I don't know one that is really focused diving on, into commercial.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, if I was a wholesaler, that's one of the things I would work on, because everybody else is hitting the same houses you're hitting. You know, like bulk packages versus single homes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, you know, if you can figure out either through partnerships or your, you know, with people or your banks or lines of credit, you know, I mean, you see this because you're listing. I mean, your amount of people that call you on a single family home for sale that's an investment property is through the roof, right?
That's right.
But when you get to that bulk, say 10 houses,
it narrows it down.
Like, your phone's not ringing as much, but you got a whole different group of people calling you.
That's right.
Right?
It's just buying power. There's way more people that have the buying power on for one home versus five.
That's right.
You know,
so
it's as simple as that.
That's right. So if you can create that opportunity for yourself, that's what I'm saying.
You're like, in a much smaller pool.
Right. That's zigging when others are zagging. So,
yeah. And we're just throwing out some ideas for you guys. So, I mean, like, you know, you can think of your own zigging and zagging. We're just trying to give you some things that, you know, that have
that
come
works,
to mind.
That's been done in the past that mm-hmm. will repeat itself, you know.
What are some things to consider?
Yeah. I mean, to me, part of it's how much competition.
Yeah, you know? So if you're in an arena where everybody that's around you is doing the same thing, I mean, this really applies to wholesalers. I mean, because I know those guys are showing up at houses and there's either somebody there ahead of them or somebody's coming after them.
I can't tell you how many times I've heard the wholesalers said the ladies like, "Oh, you're my seventh, you know, da 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 today," and you know, then it just becomes a relationship, a trust deal. Which one should trust the most? You know,
that's
so
exactly right.
But I mean, I think I don't know if this is a good zigzag example, you tell me, but when we were first starting out, you know, we became friends with some of the courthouse step guys.
Yeah.
And I was like, I went down there once. I was like, number one, you got to think about what zig and zag, like play to your strengths. And I was like, I could not see myself going down there every day playing games, you know, almost like politics, you know what I mean? Like to get a house.
Oh yeah.
And so I just partnered up with a couple of guys and like, they'd go, you know, they did the title search. They rode by the house to make sure it existed and was in good shape. And I'd give them $3,000-$4,000 the day after closing for that house, mm-hmm. you know, and keep on rolling. Mm-hmm. And people are like, "Why you gave up $3,000-$4,000? Well, if I went down there, they're going to bid me up anyway.
You weren't going to get it.
I wasn't going to get it. So
if you were, you'd have paid 10 more for
it. So I was able to stay focused on our business, you know, and managing and all that stuff and then also bank relationships and all that stuff, and let somebody else do all that work. So to me, that was a practical example of zigging versus zagging. I could have gone in there in the foray of all that and really learned it. And to this day, I've only been, I think, twice.
The goal is to get the house.
Right.
You know, I mean,
at buying it right.
Yeah. So if you're getting it at the courthouse steps, you're buying it right. And if you got to pay a couple extra grand on it, I mean, that's obviously worth it.
You know, can you add value to the deal versus somebody else? You know,
yeah. What do you mean by that?
You know, what do you bring to the table? In that courthouse example, there's nothing I could do.
Yeah.
You know, so it was better for me to stay working on what I was better at, you know, operations and all that kind of stuff versus, you know, bidding. And I don't do well with politics. You know what I mean? Like, I just knew that wasn't.
Yeah.
So I knew I couldn't add any value being at the courthouse steps, you know, like it just wasn't. You know, I'm trying to think of another example. You know, 2-bedroom or the 20 unit apartments, can I add value? Yes. I mean, there's only a handful of us that can even manage
that much.
That 20-30 unit apartment, you know, I can name off the management companies that do it, and there's not many versus there's 20 something that manage single families all day long, you know.
Or, is that how many management companies we got in Memphis?
Oh, at least 20. No, it's probably 30 or 40. It's probably like 50.
How many over 100 houses?
That's what I don't know. There's a lot of single agents out there that do 50 houses, 70 houses.
Could you imagine being a single agent doing like
that's all you? That's your full time job.
Huh.
Yeah. So, you know, but the biggest thing of all of this, if people could hear us say, is like, you, whatever you're zigging or zagging, like you might want to not zig when others are zagging. You might want to stay with the zag.
Yeah.
If you can still buy it right, you know?
Yeah. This is not, the message is not, you have to go do this.
Start off and like, oh my gosh, I can't follow them anymore.
No, that's right.
You know,
no, that's not the message. The message is, if you're going with the flow and you're getting some deals, that's fine.
That's right.
But don't be so blindsided that you can't look off, you know, and pay attention to something else. And just keep your kind of nose to the grind. I don't.
Well, I mean, part of it's like how many deals. If you're only doing, if you're doing one a year,
yeah, what's the difference?
What's the difference? You know, if you're doing one a quarter, I'd still say,
what's the difference?
If you're doing handfuls a month, I think you need to be thinking about how to zig and zag. You know, like, I mean, we got turnkey guys that are now in 3 at 106 and 3 at 109 and 3 at 112, and you know they've been in 3 at 127, but I mean. They're in zip codes that
we would have never thought about.
Never thought that they would ever go, you know, but they've got to do it to keep their business going. So they're zigging, whatever.
I'm zagging.
You're
right.
Zagging. Yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, how big a learning curve do you have, you know, to go off? And if you're going to go from MLS straight to tax sale, do you have the time and the effort to figure out how that tax, because there's a lot of intricacies of the tax sale. You can't just go over there and build on a house. Okay.
That's mine.
Let me go walk in there and, you know, rekey and start working on it. Yeah, that's the smartest thing you could ever do. Yeah, right. You know, like, which, I mean, you dealt with tax sale just last week. You couldn't even sell it, right? You found out that the title
was
encumbered by a tax sale. So
yeah, 8 or 9. He bought 8 or 9. He wanted to sell them all. And none of them have a clean title.
Yeah, none of them. So he either thought he could, you know, bypass the system or just didn't understand the system. You know what I mean? But the system is what it is.
I pretty much know he didn't understand.
Gotcha.
He did not realize that.
Yeah, to have quiet title.
It's a green card that has to be signed by the previous owner.
Showing they got served and all that stuff.
And that so, they're not going to have a claim against the property. They've let it go. So yeah. Yes, there are some steps. Now he can still sell those. It's just he's got a few steps. He's got to go through to clean them up.
That's $2,000 a house to get that quiet title. Like, but if, unless you went through it and studied it and read and talked to others that have done it, you know, you just can't. It just would not be good to zig into that foray, for example.
You definitely need to do your homework if you're going to go off. So it's super easy from a knowledge and experience standpoint to stay with the herd, right? Because you can see that what other people are doing. You can see mistakes. You can also see successes. But if you're going to zag, you know, when others are zagging, make sure that you educate yourself, that you're extremely familiar with whatever you're zigging with to make sure you don't get caught in the situation. Because I know for a fact this guy's not going to have maybe he has it. He's not going to want to spend $2,000 per house to get those things cleaned up. That's why he's selling them to begin with. He was selling them to make a profit. I don't think he had any intention
to paying that fee.
Of paying that fee and keeping it long term. I think it's something that snuck up on him. And now he's likely going to have to, you know, save some money from rent and do stuff like that in order to get those things cleared up.
You know, I think that that goes into just not being naive and just asking a ton of questions.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times early on I went to meet people that were trying to sell me a house and you found out they just got it quit claimed before a tax sale. All right. Well, that didn't do jack.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? That just delayed the inevitable. Mm. And sometimes even then the house got sold at tax sale, even with a quit claim and play, you know what I mean? Like it just got so messy. But if you don't ask all the right questions and do the title search and know what you're, you know, getting into, or go with the wrong, you know, title company that doesn't do the due diligence. But
that's important.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about singular focus.
Yeah, man.
Tell me what you mean by singular focus. What does that look like?
You know, I think it just plays into this zig and zagging pretty well because
in relation to it.
I mean, just because become a subject matter expert, you know, an SME. You know, to become a subject matter expert or whatever you're trying to go into.
Yeah.
You know, dig in, dig deep. You know, you might not be doing all the work, but at least you need to understand how it all plays and it comes together.
Yeah.
You know, so
knowledge of your competitors.
Yeah.
I love that one, man. I used to do, when I was in new construction, I used to go mystery shopping.
Mm-hmm.
So I would sit in a model home, right? Quick story. Sit in a model home all day long. People would come to me and I would, you know, hello, here's a model home, you know, buy a house. Well, we would leave the model some days and go to either, not in our direct competition, but go to other neighborhoods and walk in like a buyer and have them pitch to us and try to sell to us and get you know, you might not think that anything they're saying for the first 20 minutes is worth keeping, but on the way out, you say bye and they say something else to you and it catches you like, hey, wait a minute, that's good.
It's good.
I'd mystery shop all the time. So knowledge of your competitors to me is huge.
And let's make sure we separate that, like, not being like the competitor.
No.
But knowledge of the competitor.
Knowing what they're doing.
Know what they were doing. Mm-hmm. So that, because, I mean, I got in a phone conversation for 30 minutes last night with a lady in California who's got an apartment. She's been through a third management company. Mm-hmm. You know, what's different?
Yeah.
You know, why should I try you? You know, like, mm-hmm. So you need at least to know where others are coming from to explain how you got to where you're going. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, but I don't really care what, you know, don't worry about, I used to think, oh, I can't tell anybody, you know, that's what's been so good about this radio show.
Oh, I never cared how they were selling me or what they were selling me. Yeah. I just wanted to hear some different lingo and language and understand what they're selling.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't care necessarily if they had something better or worse than I did. I just wanted to know what it was, and mm-hmm. it educated me on how to proceed with my clients. Same thing with here. If you know what other wholesalers are doing, if you're a wholesaler, we're on that today, but, and you know what they're doing, it helps you kind of distinguish yourself and separate yourself. It gives you some other ideas. I don't want to go do that. Mm-hmm. Same thing. It's the same principle, zigging and zagging.
That's
right. I mean, like, you know, you hear what others are doing,
which gives you information to know. Maybe I can go up. That's exactly what kind of where the concept for me came. It's like, oh, well, they're going over here.
Yeah.
You know, I understand it and why. So what else is out there?
So I'm going to go over here.
I'm going to go over here. You know, and so, I just don't worry about competitors. I just want to know what they're doing, you know. So, and then for me, it's like, I can't tell you how many times I get in conversation with, you know, talking about subject matter expert versus zigging and zagging. It's like, everybody wants to do everything.
Yeah.
And that's where we kind of get with the singular focus, man. Don't be all things to all people or try to do all things at once. I mean, I talked to a wholesaler this weekend that, you know, he's been doing wholesaling 8 years mm-hmm. and now getting into flipping. And some people give him a hard time, you know, about it. And I'm like, dude, all I did was buy and hold for 10.
Yeah.
Before I did anything else.
Got really good.
I got
at
really
that.
Good at buy and hold,
yeah.
You know? And so, you know, for me to sell was, you know, act of Congress last year to sell a few, but you know, but I didn't add on a layer of property management. We didn't add on a layer of, you know, the maintenance company. Like I thought about that when I was talking to him. 10 years buy and hold, and then property management started. And it was another 3 years before even maintenance company was even discussed.
Yeah.
Then it was another 2 years before, 2 or 3 years before finance company discussed. Like,
and this is in relation to your 80%. You need to have 80% of your systems and process figured out before adding something else new to it.
I think so. I think you need to get it humming
real close to
humming, you know, or at least you got it going down the road and you know what you're, you know, you got your last little bit of things you got to tighten up, you know, before you go diving into something totally different. I
do this with it. I tell investors this right here that, you know, they'll talk to me about different products. And what I mean by different products are different rental ranges. So if I've got a single family guy and he's talking about 800 or 900, then he looks at me, you know, and he says, well, tell me about this $25,000 house that's renting for 450 or 500. Yes, that's great. Let's get good at your base. Mm-hmm. Let's get you several of these $800 rentals in place. Let's get several of them cash flowing. And then let's come over. If you want to improve your portfolio numbers at that point, then let's come over here and take a chance. If that doesn't work, you're mm-hmm. still in business over here versus taking a chance at the very beginning on something that might, you know, it's a little reckless, a little more chance involved with it or risk involved,
mm-hmm.
And sticking with something that you're good at first.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a couple of things. One is, you know, when you're trying to get that singular focus and that systems of process, lay out the process from start to finish.
Yeah.
And who's responsible for it.
Yeah.
And what's your, you know, standard operating procedure, you know, and when you got that and you can really see that and understand it and everything's covered, you know, then it maybe you can go into something else, you know, mm-hmm. like, but don't try to do all at once. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I threw out there, Rich Harrell was a good example that I think about.
Great guy.
Was he AT&T?
Verizon.
Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
Verizon started wholesaling. I mean, he did wholesaling for several years.
Before he left that.
And now he's doing, I would say, he probably would say he flips
more than he's
wholesaling. Probably majority. Mm-hmm. But he didn't just go wholesale one or two deals and start flipping. You know, like that.
He got really good at that and then moved on.
Yep.
I'd encourage everybody, if you're listening this morning and you're focused on, you heard us when zigging and zagging, just make sure that you educate yourself on the zag. You know, if others are zigging, it's easy to know that. Mm-hmm. The one takeaway I would say today is just make sure you educate yourself on the zag and Take chances, you know? I mean,
that's a great point.
It is. I mean, you got to take some chances. If you're going to get out there from if you're going to zig when others are zagging, you're going to have to take that chance. So
low-cost experiment.
You love
that,
don't
you? That's my favorite phrase.
Dan, thanks for joining me today. Alyssa Fowler, she is the head of our residential and retail division. You can reach her at 901-371-1758. I appreciate her coming on today. Thank you guys for listening to the Memphis Real Estate Hour. We'll catch you next week at 8 a.m. Yeah, was crawling in the darkness.